Today's Tesho is on case 49 in the Blue Rock Collection, Haikigan Roku. Case 49, sun shows the golden carp is out of the net. Engo's introduction, 7 piercing and 8 breaking through, seizing the drums and capturing the banners, 100 barriers and 1,000 checkpoints, watching the front and guarding the rear, holding the tiger's head and securing its tail. Even all these are not comparable to the veteran master's ability. The ox head disappearing, the horse head appears. That also is not a great wonder. Tell me, what do you do when a person of transcendent experience comes? See the following. Main subject. Sancho said to Seppo, the golden carp is out of the net. Tell me, what will it feed on? Seppo said, when you have got out of the net, I will tell you. Sancho said, the renowned teacher of 1,500 monks cannot find even one word to say about this topic. Seppo said, I am the chief abbot and have much to attend to. Secho's verse. The golden carp comes out of the net. Don't say it remains in the water still. It shakes and the heavens move the earth. Swinging its fans, lashing its tail, it blows like a whale, raising great waves. Then thunder comes and a cool breeze. A cool breeze, yes, a cool breeze comes. Who in the whole universe knows this? So today is the third day of our autumn, of our August, Sashin, and what a beautiful morning, yeah? Really beautiful. I lived much of my life in Seattle, so doing Zazen and listening to the sound of rain, those two things that go together for me in an indescribable way. It's just, of course, when you do Zazen, you sit and listen to the rain. And in Seattle, it rains 300 days a week, a year. So there's hardly any time, except for maybe 3 months in the summer when it's not pouring. And if you do Zazen, you pretty much are sitting listening to the sound of rain. It's so beautiful. And I think it helps us to practice, you know, to have the sound of rain. It's relaxing and it's rhythmical. It's very, very beautiful, very nice. On the other hand, you know, there are other sounds that can be very annoying. You know, sometimes, motorcycles will go by and they can be almost insanely noisy, you know. Ideally, you know, if you were going to do Zazen, you'd pick a spot that was just, you know, perfect. It would be up in the mountains, far from civilization. And we could look out the window and see deer and hear the birds. But there'd be no traffic noise, no disturbances, no music coming from down the street. It would be great, right? You know? There is such a place, by the way. When I first came here to the northeast from Seattle, I did a little bit of training with a man named Edo Roshi, who was associated with my first teacher, Genki Roshi. And Edo Roshi was fortunate enough, he had a little zendo in New York City when he first came here in the 60s. And he had a little apartment in the city, in New York City, where he would have zazen. And he rented this kind of a rundown apartment, and he advertised a Zen practice. This is back in the 60s. And as fate would have it, one day a woman came in to practice with him, and she really got into it, and it turns out that she was married to the president of the 3M company. So if any of you use Scotch tape, that's a 3M company product, and they make other things too. They make compact discs, and they're one of the biggest companies in the United States. So her husband got interested in Zen also, and so he was a patron of the of Zen, and he and his wife bought this beautiful, like 500 acres up in upstate New York, or central New York, the Catskills. And there's a beautiful temple building there. It couldn't be more beautiful. It's Japanese style with all the modern Western comforts. So if you see a Japanese temple, one of the things you can count on is that there's no central heating. So if some of you have a chance to do winter sesshin in a traditional Japanese temple, look out. Because it's not heated. It's not 65. You know, we keep the temperature here in the winter to 65. It's not 65 if it's, you know, if it's 25 outside. It's 25 in the zendo, you know. And believe me, I've sat like that. Sometimes it can be so cold, you know, you feel like you're going to lose your mind, you know. It's just so cold. It's just, I don't know how to put it, but it gets to the point where you just think, I'm going to scream, you know, it's so cold, you know. But it can actually hurt. It's like, this is so cold it hurts, you know. So anyway, in Zen, in Japanese Zen, they don't heat the temple, you know. This place, Daibosatsu, there's central heating. So it looks like a Japanese temple, but you go in and you don't sleep on the floor. In a Japanese temple, you might sleep on zabutan. I mean a futon. You know, and futons in Japan are not like American. Like if you go to a futon store on Route 22 and you buy a futon, it's about 8 inches thick. It's got foam rubber in it and cotton, and it weighs about 300 pounds, right? Delivery people have to actually, you know, two people have to sort of lift it off the truck. But in Japan, a futon is about, it's several layers of cotton cloth. So it's about like your zabutan, right? So that's what people sleep on, cushion like that. And that's it. And you get an extra one to cover yourself up if it's cold, you know. So it's different, you know. So anyway, the point is, this place is on about 500 acres of land, something like that, 200, 500 acres of land. And it's designed by some architect, and it's like beautiful. When you go inside, there's art treasures all over. So when you walk into the building, you have to take off your shoes, and it's just like a museum. And there's like, scrolls and statues. It's like a museum. Right? Everything's exquisite. I was up there training, and it's even got a lake, you know. So the zendo overlooks a picturesque lake. You know, it's like amazing. If you dreamed of a Zen center, you couldn't dream of a better place. And there's a lake, and in the moonlight, the moon shines on the lake, and you can, you know, it's just incredible. So anyway, I had done a couple sesshin there with Edo Roshi, and this is over a couple of years. I was interested in his practice of Zen. He had trained with my teacher, and I had finished my training, but I wanted to just see what I could learn from Eido Roshi. And I got there early once, before Sesshin, and I decided I was going to hike around the lake, which is actually just a couple of miles. It's maybe a mile and a half. But I hiked around the lake, and there's a regular little path that keep open there. And about halfway around the lake, I ran into this guy from, I guess he was French or Belgian. And he was sitting, looking very pensive and sad at the water's edge. And I said, "What's wrong?" And he said, "I came here from my native country to practice Zen." And he said, "I'm just miserable at this place." And I sat down and said, "Well, what's got you down? The no sleep, zazen, too pain in your legs?" He said, "Oh no, it's not that." He said, "All these people argue all the time." He said, "This place is like a madhouse. Everybody's arguing all the time." And he said, "It drives me crazy." Yeah. He thought that when you come to a Zen temple, would be full of enlightened beings, right? So it's a Zen temple. So you go inside, and all these monks are smiling, and they're going to help you to wake up, and so on and so on. But there are no Zen temples in the world like that, or Buddhist temples of any kind like that. Buddhist temples are full of people who are trying to wake up, and they have all kinds of problems, just like everybody. And so in Zen temples and in Buddhist temples generally, you can meet all kinds of people. You can meet people who have really done terrible things. You can meet people who have like beaten up their spouses, and are tortured by guilt and violent impulses. You can meet people who are deeply neurotic. You meet all kinds of people in the Zen world. I was rooming with this guy who was not deeply neurotic, but up there they have a well system. They don't have a city water there up in the middle of nowhere, so they have a well, and in the summer it can get very dry, and they worry about having enough water. So everybody's actually allowed to take a shower every other day. So you take a shower every other day, and you're urged to conserve water. So anyway, I would be in there running the water while I was brushing my teeth, and my roommate would come in and say, "You're using too much water." Yeah. And he was like lying in bed listening to me, and I'm sure he was thinking, "That guy is just letting doesn't he care?" And I think I was driving him crazy, And he had a point, But it's almost, he had a point. I was wasting a little water. But on the other hand, I wasn't wasting that much, I thought. But it bothered him, And I myself have been, when I did my first sesshin there, sitting in the back with a bunch of people who were complete beginners, And so, I was seated next to these people, and the sit would start, And basically, it would be like the bell would ring, and then You know? And after a while, I felt like moving, you know? It was like, well, if everybody's going to do it, you know? Because, you know, you're sitting there, and your legs are killing you, right? And you're thinking, I'm not going to move. I'm going to go into deep mushin, right? I'm going to go into deep mushin. And yet, you know, all the people next to you, they're just... It makes it so hard, doesn't it? It makes it hard not to move. And then you look and, you know, the guy next to you has his leg, you know, you're sitting there thinking, ring the bell, ring the bell. The guy next to him, he's stretched out, you know, legs stretched out, whistling, you know. And it makes it very hard. It's very annoying, right? It was hard for me not to slug these guys, you know, actually. It was like, after a while, I just felt like, you know, that they didn't have any respect for the situation. And, you know, even if you, those are exceptional cases, but wherever you go in any Zen center, you're going to have this, you know. There's like, in most temples, there's people who are really sincere practitioners. There are people who are there maybe exploring, and there are people who are of two minds about practice. You know, they want to be there, but they don't want to be there. And their ambivalence, they telegraph their ambivalence in a million different ways, you know. So, when I was at DBZ, Daibosatsu Zendo, I really sit, you know. I love Zen, and I really gave it my best shot. You know, I wanted to really, since I was training with Eido Roshi, I wanted to take it seriously, and I really did my koan training seriously. And that meant, you know, sit. Don't move. Focus on your koan. And at the end of the night, I would be wiped out, you know. I would hit the bed and just think, you know, I couldn't get to the bed fast enough. Right? I wouldn't even wash my face or brush my, just like, here, I would be running for bed, you know. And I'd lie down in bed and these guys would be heading out of the zendo, you know. You could hear them, you know, they're not supposed to talk, and they're talking, they're going down the hall. They were going to drive into town and have some brewskis, you know, hoist some brews, right? And they were like sneaking out. It was like they're going to sneak out of camp, right? You know? Come on. You know? So they get in their cars and they drive down to Livingston Manor, which is this deeply depressing town in Catskills, you know, this place that's economically like a wasteland. They were going to go have some brews and come back, you know, sneak like bad boys. You know. So they said, wow, you know, it takes all kinds, right? You know. And even if you're with people you really care about, you know, they can get on your nerves. You know, maybe you've noticed this. I've been married for 30 years, so... you know, now my wife and I are like very smooth together most of the time. I have to add the most of the time. We're very smooth, right? But for many years, there was a period there in the middle where it was like, I think I did many things that annoyed my wife. And I have to tell you, she had habits that annoyed me, you know. And it would just be like, oh, there, you know, we could almost do it together. We'd both go at the same time, oh, there you go again, right? You know, it's like everybody has tics or habits, right? And even if you love somebody and you care about them, you find that they're annoying, you know, sometimes. And I think that's very interesting, you know? I mean, you know, when I met my wife, I wanted to live with her every minute of the day. You know, I just wanted to be with her all the time. And And at some point, you know, here's this person you wanted to live with all the time, and you find that they're doing something that's very profoundly annoying. You know? So, you know, when I was 40 years old or so, I was in the bathroom and I was just about to throw a tube of toothpaste away. And my wife came in and she said, "Now, Kurt, did you use all the toothpaste?" Or she'd say, you know, "Do Zen masters leave the lights on in the bathroom?" "Hi, you call yourself a Zen master and you leave the lights on?" So, you know, this is life, right? You know, it's very annoying. You know, so people go to Zen temples and they think they have a highly idealized view, because those kinds of dynamics, those kinds of relationships are inevitable human relationships, you know. In Seattle, we had a Zen center where there was a residence, you know, people could live there. And there would always be some tensions, you know, even with people who love each other, there's tensions, you know. Somebody's not doing the dishes at the right time, you know, it's this kind of thing, you know. He always leaves the dishes for everybody else to clean up, you know, and it's true. So-and-so always leaves the dishes, you know, but on the other hand, you know, maybe does other things, you know. So, but these, you know, especially in the middle of a sesshin, some of these things can just drive you crazy, right? You know, if you're, you know, you can be sitting with somebody who maybe, you know, maybe breathes too loud, you know. So you're sitting there and you're trying to focus and somebody's going, it's like the train is coming in, right? You know, and it's difficult, right? I mean, the person maybe isn't being considerate, but on the other hand, that person may be fighting for his life, right? You know, so you're fighting for your life, and that person's fighting for his life. It's all he can do not to move, so he's just huffing and puffing, right? And you're trying to disappear into your breath, and you know, those kinds of things can be very annoying, and this is kind of inevitable at every stage of practice. I've met several Zen teachers. I really loved both of my teachers. You know, they were both, I thought, very good teachers. But I have met some Zen masters who are extremely annoying people, and I couldn't possibly practice with them. You know, they were just, they had very weird personal habits. There was a guy, there's all kinds of, it takes all kinds. There was this guy, Hirano Osho-san, Hirano Katsufumi was his, Katsufumi Hirano was his name, and he was in charge of training at Eheiji, a big Soto temple in Japan, and he was a good friend of Webb, my teacher, my second teacher. And Webb just thought Hirano was the most wonderful person in the world. And Hirano was, I just thought, you know, the most annoying person in the world. I mean, when he would give teishos that were much worse than mine. If you're wondering, you know, where is this going? You know, Hirano would not just give teishos. We'd be sitting for like 40 minutes, 50 minutes, and you'd be thinking, okay, in 10 minutes I can get up and go to the bathroom. And then, you know, Hirano would go, the sound of the rain. You know, and then he'd say, it's like the poet Ryokan used to say. And he'd quote some Japanese poetry. And then he'd start telling a little story. He'd go, I was, you know, in Kyoto a year ago, and I wanted to see the a Buddha at Nara. So I got on the bus, you know. And then I rode the bus and I stopped at a tea house and I had some tea. And then I got back on the bus, you know. And then after a while you're thinking, where the hell is this going? You know, where? And of course you're sitting and your legs are screaming, right? And he's going, and then, you know, he might take out a little hanky and cry. He might say, oh, there was a little bird. dying. you know, then he'd go on. He goes, and then I got back on the bus. And the rain began to fall. And I thought, about, and it goes on and on and on. And he was like this, he was... incredibly annoying person in just about every way. And he had another habit. I don't mean to make fun of him, but it was so strange. He would just break wind on the cushion, you know? I'm not kidding. I mean, this guy, he was supposed to be like very high up in the Soto temple establishment, you know? So first session, you know, sometimes he would just break wind. It's like, no problem, you know. I was like, huh? You can do that? You know? Holy smokes. He didn't seem embarrassed. You know, it's like, no problem. It's all natural, you know. It's like, okay. You know? He and Genki didn't hit it off either, as a matter of fact. Anyway, that's another story, a story for another day. But they clashed. Hirano would sit and keep us sitting for an hour and a half while he told his pointless stories. And then he always referred to himself as the Zazen King. He would say, Zazen King has come to Seattle, right? And Genki thought this guy was just full of baloney. And Genki, who could sit forever, I once saw Genki sit for 7 hours, you know. After one of these ordeals, when Hirano kept us sitting there for like an hour and a half while he drove us insane with his stories, eventually what happened was somebody rang the bell mercifully, you know, and ended this ordeal. And, of course, our legs were killing us, and we all got up. And Genki Roshi was a very compassionate person. He got up and pretended that his legs were giving out. And he said something like, oh, well, I guess when the Zazen King comes to town, my legs give out, you know. So there was some friction there. You know? So the point is, what is the point of this? Is this just another Hirano story? You know. We want so much to be, yesterday I said Zen was about freedom. You know, this koan is called the golden carp is out of the net, right? And we all want... we all want to be, out of the net, you know. We want so much to be out of the net. This is just a deep impulse. And so that poor guy who came to Daibosatsu, he wanted to get out of the net, you know. He must have been really unhappy in Belgium. And he got on, you know, he must have found a tricycle magazine and thought, oh, Daibosatsu in the Catskill Mountains looks beautiful, you know. And he imagine how he felt driving up to that place, and it was like a dream come true. It takes you like half an hour from the edge of the property to get to the Zendo, and it's a beautiful country road. It winds through. You know, there's a waterfall. It's like, oh my God! It's astounding, right? It was purchased in the '60s for about $5 million. Now it would be, I don't know, $50 million. You know? And it's absolutely breathtaking. And then you get up to the temple and you have the lake, he must have thought, ah, out of the net. I'm finally out of the net, see? And it must have, you know, been so exciting for him. And then, you know, he gets inside the Zendo and it's all this quarreling, all this, he's arguing, these personalities clashing, and so on. And, you know, it's a, you know, we all have that desire, right? It doesn't necessarily have to do with people, you know, it may have to do with other things. I mean, you know, I've talked about this before, but when I was a kid, I was living on military bases, you know, and they're very boring places. And my family life wasn't very happy, you know. My father and mother were both unhappy people a lot of the time, though they tried very much to be happy, they couldn't work it out. And so I had a lot of isolated downtime, because there wasn't much to do on military bases, and so one of the things I loved to do was read National Geographic. And as I said, you know, the other day, my dad had a drinking problem, my mother had her problems, you know, the military bases are unhealthy environments, in my opinion, psychologically. So, you know, I'd open up the, get the National Geographic and, you know, it would be like, it would be an article on, you know, mystical Tibet, you know. And I open it up and read and you think, oh, you know, I want to go to mystical Tibet. And here's a, this kid is 14 years old and he's the God King. You know, what could that mean, you know? And you think, oh gosh, that would be great, you know. And maybe they can fly, you know, or at least maybe they can fly out of here, you know what I mean? You know, we want to get out of the net so badly, whatever our net might be. And, you know, when we think about Zen practice, too, we can, you know, we have this powerful desire not to be here, you know? I mean, you have a koan, maybe you have a koan, and you're working on your koan, and you know the what we want is to answer the koan, right? You want to answer. I mean, that seems logical, you know. And we all have scenarios in our mind where we're going to answer the koan. So the ideal thing, the perfect day would be like this: you come into the Dokusan room, and I go, "Excellent, here's your new koan," and then you go back to your cushion. And you do, you have two or three wonderful sits, you're transported, you're really, you know, you go into the Dokusan room and I go, ah, my God, you've done it, you know. In a day, you've answered the koan, right? That would be perfect, right? And this is like out of the net, it's the out of the net, right out of the net. But, you know, we can't necessarily get out of the net, you know. Sometimes you have a koan and you're stuck there, and you're stuck and you're stuck and you're stuck and you're stuck. And you know, it's the worst feeling sometimes, right? Because you're trying but you can't get it. And it's so frustrating to be caught in the net, right? You know. And part of the reason we practice Zen is because we have this deep hunger for freedom. Mm-hmm. This deep hunger to be out of the net. But, you know, I think being out of the net is overrated. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, this world is a frightening place, and not a perfect place, et cetera, et cetera. And yet, you know, you come to Sesshin, and, you know, basically, you sit on the cushion, and your legs are killing you, and you're tired. All the things, they're not, you know, you don't get enough sleep. You're supposed to get plenty of sleep. You're not supposed to be in pain, you know, and other things. and maybe you have a cold, not feeling that well. And you sit on the cushion, and every once in a while, you know, everything's going wrong. You're not answering your koan. Your legs are killing you. The guy next to you is, you know. And he shouldn't be, or she shouldn't be moving around. That's true. And the whole picture is extremely annoying. And yet, you know, you sit there, and all of a sudden, everything drops away, and you just feel so happy to be alive, right? So happy just to be alive. And at that moment, you know, that's really what, you know, Zen is all about, you know, really. It's like, you know, we're running from the world a lot of the time in a million different ways, but you know, sometimes we bump right into it, you know? And it's so beautiful. It's so wonderful. You know, somebody came into Dokusan last night and said, I said, how are your sits going? And the person said, oh, every sit was a struggle. You know, and this person's really doing a good job, not moving around, not bouncing around on the cushion, not, you know, this person's really making a serious effort. And I said, how is it going? And the person said, oh, it's been murder, right? And I said, well, how do you feel now? He said, great, great. It's like, ah, wonderful. You know, there's a Zen master named Sheng Yan, Chinese Chan master, who has an expression. It's called bitter practice, sweet mind. It's like sometimes, you know, you're sitting on the cushion, you're struggling with your koan, you're not answering it, your legs hurt, you're tired. And then suddenly, you know, you go back to your room and you think, Jesus, I'm really happy, you know. I don't know why, you know. Nothing's going right, you know. But it's because, you know, we want to be out of the net. We want to be out of the world, you know. We want to be out of the world. And which is such a crazy, dangerous place, and everything is wrong, and Bush is the president of the whole thing, of the whole mess. Right? And you really, as soon as you open the newspaper, or I do, and think, this can't be happening, you know, this can't be happening. You know, this, don't tell me, pinch me, you know, I've got to be having a bad dream, you know. But this happens on every level, you know. Sometimes you just think, this can't be life. You know? You're sitting on the cushion, your legs are killing you, you think, this is crap. You know, I hate this. And you could, if you stick it out at some point, you know, you suddenly realize, I love this. I love life. I love being alive. It's a great gift to be alive. And then, you know, then it's possible sometimes to answer your koan, right? Because then you're just in the moment. You can suddenly, instead of looking for something, you know, that you think you wanted, you might find something that you really need, you know, to answer your koan. You know, so I guess we all have to go through this difficulty. You know, we all have to bang our heads against the wall 50 million times, and then suddenly we realize that this is really wonderful, you know. So, you know, getting out of the net is highly overrated. What I'm kind of trying to say is, you know, please don't be daunted by your obstacles. You know, don't get too down in the dumps if you aren't answering your koan. What's the hurry? You know, what's your hurry? Because you know what? When you answer this koan, I've got another one, you know? And you can say, well, but I want Dai Kensho. Well, I hope you don't think that after Dai Kensho all your problems are over. There's just a new set of challenges, you know? I mean, Zen is all about refining our lives, right? It's all about cultivating awareness and compassion. And it's actually all about unifying ourselves with the world, you know, or another way to put it is overcoming the illusion of our separateness from everything around us. You know, overcoming our illusion of separateness. So if you're working with a breath perception koan, you know, you might have a moment where, you know, everything falls away and you're just, you know, you have these kind of weird experiences, you know, where you feel like you're floating or your electricity is flowing through your body or something. And this is just a non-dualistic awareness. Your sense of separation from the world has disappeared and you have a unified mind in accord with the way. All self-centered striving ceases. Doubts and irresolutions vanish and life and true faith is possible. See? This is a samadhi. You know, and so you sit there and say, I hate it, I hate it, I hate it, and then boom. It's like, wow. You know, so don't be daunted by your obstacles. The point is not to, pass your koan and get on with the next koan. This is not like a competitive examination system. The point is to lead a deep life, see? So you know, I took 5 years working on the breath perception koan. At 5 years, you know? And many people spend years and years working on the mu koan. And you can say, oh, I've been working on this koan for 2 years now and I'm getting nowhere. You know, and it's like, where did you think you were going? It's not about answering the koan, it's about leading a deep life. It's about leading a deep life. You know, we can be shallow, selfish people who have all kinds of plans and you know, all kinds of dreams, and but we can be deep. You know, we can be part of this whole thing that's unfolding around us. This, you know, tree doesn't worry. You know, little acorn doesn't worry about becoming a tree. It doesn't sit there and think, "Oh my God, what's going to become of me?" You know. What's happening to me, you know? Oh my God, my head is cracking open, right, you know? Oh, but something's coming out of my head, is it a tumor, you know? Oh my God, you know? Now what? Now I'm poking out of the ground, you know? Oh, I'm blinded, you know? Oh, this is horrible, right, you know? It just naturally grows, you know? The little acorn becomes a great oak tree, right? And now, you know, Zen is about becoming a great tree, you know, a great tree of emptiness, right? Really, that's what we're trying to be. It's like great trees of emptiness, if that makes any sense. You know, people who eat mu, who eat emptiness morning, noon, and night, and sleep emptiness, you know, say goodnight, emptiness, goodnight, you know. Those kind of people grow into great trees that shelter living beings under their boughs. And it takes much communing with emptiness, right, to be a great oak tree. And I'm working on it myself. And I will keep, not great oak tree yet, but I will keep working until this life is over, you know. And this is the goal. So passing a koan is not really the point. The point is having a deep encounter with mushin, with reality, see? And a deep encounter with this moment. You know, there's another Zen teacher I have never met, and his name is Joshu Sasaki Roshi. But he had a student whose name was Leonard Cohen, who's a songwriter. Maybe you've heard of him. And Cohen has spent a lot of time at Joshu Sasaki's place in Cimarron, in California. He lived in a communal setting for a long time. And he said, you know, all this Zen training has really freed me from the illusion of privacy. See, privacy. See, because, you know, you live with all these people day in and day out, you know, you know, basically you can't maintain all these illusions after a while about each other. And he said, there's a lot of friction. But he said, it's like stones in a bag, you know. You put all these stones in the bag and they start polishing each other, you know. They have all these rough edges, but they just keep bouncing around in the bag together and they can't help it. They start polishing, right? So, I mean, all the things that annoy us are kind of like polishing us, you know. You could think of it that way. It's like polishing us. All the moments when we go in to answer the koan and we haven't answered our koan, it's like getting polished. It's not an indignity, you know, you go, oh, poor me, you know. But it's like being polished. It's like polished. So you know, it can be, you know, all those people at Daibosatsu Zendo arguing are really, you know, it's horrible to be around all these arguments. And the Buddha's own students once were arguing so badly he left. This really happened. In the Buddhist community, when he was getting started, there were so many arguments in the community that he himself left. He said, you guys work it out and call me when it's over. You know, and he went away and lived by himself for a while. So but they worked it out. You know, they got over their rough edges and they polished. But it's not just interactions with people. It's interactions with life, you know. Every time you try to answer your koan and you fail, You're polishing yourself. You're developing deep. You're becoming a deeper person. Your practice is deepening. See, this is not. I'm not saying this to make you feel good. There's no other way to be a deep person. You know, there's no other way to grow. It's like having pain in your legs. You know, look, if you are in agony and you move, please don't think that I have contempt for you or disapprove of it. Because I've been there, and if you're in agony, move. You know, adjust your posture and go on. And if you want to sit in a chair, sit in a chair. But you know, if you're doing this all the time, or you know, it's 15 minutes into the sit and you're scratching your head, you know, you're kidding yourself. You know, you're not going to become a deeper person that way. That's it'll never happen. So, as I say, if you're in agony, that's not productive. But, you know, I'm sitting over here on this end of the room, and my job is to ring the bell, but don't kid yourself, my legs hurt. Somebody came in last night and said, I said, how are you doing? And she said, oh, my knee hurts. I said, mine too. You know, please don't fantasize and think my legs aren't hurting me, because they're hurting me too. My legs hurt. Why wouldn't they? So I'm sitting here too, trying to become a great oak tree. And I'm pushing away the pain just like everybody else. That's how it's done. I'm polishing, polishing, polishing. See? So being caught in a net is not so bad, right? It's how we become big fish. So please become a big fish. You know what I mean? Zen is not about being in agony. It's not. If you're in agony, please adjust your posture. But don't, you know, if you get out of the net, you can't really grow, right? If you're just sitting there comfortably on your cushion, dum da dum, what's for lunch? You know, nothing's going to happen. Right? Nothing. You're a little bit, when you're straining. You know, when people come into me and they look like they're going to cry because they can't answer their koan, I just feel, you know, I feel like leaning over and giving them a big kiss, you know, because it's like, I understand, you know, just keep plugging away, you know, I really applaud you, you know, it's frustrating not to be able to answer these damn koans, you know, but they're trying, and that's great, and they're caught in the net and they're struggling, you know, and it's wonderful. All I'm saying is, if that's your situation, don't cry too much. Don't get too upset. You know, don't beat yourself up. Just hang in there. You know, it's going to turn out okay. You know, and this is how people become bigger. You know. Sensho said to Seppo, "The golden carp is out of the net. Tell me, what will it feed on?" Oh, it feeds on the pain of my legs. Yeah. Okay. And Seppo said, "When you get out of the net, I'll tell you." See, who said getting out of the net was so good? Sancho said, "The renowned teacher of 1,500 monks cannot even find one word to say about this topic." And Seppo was playing a game. He said, "Listen, I couldn't give a good answer today. I'm too busy." So it's sort of a joke. So anyway, please enjoy this beautiful path. We're all here together. It's a wonderful opportunity to encounter life.